Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're opening the phone lines now for any one of you with ties to Venezuela as we talk about the protests and the violence there. If you have friends or family in Caracas or anywhere else in Venezuela and you've been speaking with them about the situation on the ground over the last few weeks, all this post-Chavez turmoil, call in and tell everybody else what we need to know about this stuff. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we have a couple of guests who are going to come on with us. But as we do from time to time, when there's big international news that is somewhat incomprehensible to most of the country, we invite you if you have ties to that part of the world. So if you have ties to Venezuela, what's your take on what's happening? You can also write it up and post it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But call in 212-433-9692. Venezuelans and anyone listening with ties to that country and a perspective on the current crisis there. And joining us as your calls are coming in is Moises Naim, contributing editor at The Atlantic and author of The End of Power. He also served as Venezuela's Minister of Trade and Industry and director of its central bank back in 1989 and 1990. Hi, Moises. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for inviting me.
And we are also joined by Joshua Goodman, Venezuela bureau chief for the Associated Press. He left Caracas just yesterday and joins us from Bogota, Colombia right now. Hello from New York, Joshua.
Thank you very much. Hi, Brian.
And Joshua, we've seen the images of avenues and plazas packed with protesters and of the tanks in the streets of some neighborhoods. But at the same time, some polling has shown that opinion is split 50-50 on the government. What's the conversation like in Venezuela now? Are some neighborhoods untouched while others are shut down?
Yeah, that's right. This is, you know, has been for 15 years and continues to be a very polarized nation. The opposition protests have been mostly centered in more middle-class neighborhoods, also near university campuses. And I think it's important to point out that these are people, in many cases, who are always or frequently opposed to the government. It's not to say there's not discontent all throughout Venezuela. In the poorer neighborhoods that have been the real base of support for the government, there's also widespread discontent with the economic situation as well as crime. But we haven't seen too many of them. We've seen really sporadic, isolated cases of those people really taking to the streets.
Moises, in a piece you wrote for The Atlantic, you noted that there's a tendency for some to frame the Venezuelan protests as another chapter in the middle class's struggle against Chavez and now his successor, Nicolas Maduro. But that's a misconception, you said. So who are in these protests, and what do you think they want?
Venezuela does not have a middle class large enough to account for 50% of the population or even more, as indicated by all polls and even by electoral results. For a long time, as you just said, more than half the country has been opposing the government. In order to get to that number, you need to have a very, very large number of the poor that the government purports to represent. It is also important to clarify that when we talk about the middle class in Venezuela, this is not the middle class that you normally know or you're familiar with in the United States or in even other countries. These are very poor people that have become even poorer in recent years and months as a result of catastrophic policies. We're talking a country with the highest inflation in the world. We're talking about the difficulty of finding milk for your children every day or insulin for diabetics or very basic staples to make the day and cook dinner and lunch. And this has become widespread, and it touches everyone, regardless of political affiliation even and social class.
Do you agree with that, Joshua?
Yeah, I agree with everything, except, I mean, I would point out, it is true. It's, you know, it's not a middle-class nation like we would consider in the U.S. However, and it's important to point out that not all the people that are protesting, I mean, if there's a million people protesting nationwide, that is a very small number of a country of 30 million. I think, though, yes, Moises is right that, you know, the problems are widespread. I think the people who have really, though, supported the government over the past 15 years haven't yet made that leap of faith to join the opposition or to join the street protests.
Because they think because many poor people think the opposition to Chavez is just for concentration of wealth in the elite, and Chavez was on their side, right? And now Maduro.
Yeah, there's part of that, and the memory of the 2002 military coup, which the opposition, you know, backed wholeheartedly. Now, granted, the opposition has evolved quite a bit since then, but for a lot of the 30% of diehard government supporters in Venezuela, it's going to be a real tough sell for them to join the opposition and join these protests. I'm not saying they're not going to do it, but they're not there yet.
Let's take a phone call. Annabella in Wayne, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, how are you? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm so glad that we are on the news internationally and also in the radio, because it is very sad that my country, I'm a Venezuela from Valencia, is shut down. We cannot express what we want, that is freedom, that we want security. It's been 14 years that we're trying to say to the world what is going on, and in a certain way, Chavez was camouflaging that he was a Democrat, but it doesn't matter how many times we go to vote, it's an empty shell, because all the powers are restrained by whatever they say. Right now, it's very sad, and it's very, you know, uncomfortable for us that are outside of the world to try to make people understand what is going on. We cannot, my family, for example, the entire family lives over there in Valencia, and they can't go anywhere. They, if they go, they can be killed. And it's not right now. It was before. They can go out at night because you are afraid that to be killed because
they're because they're opponents of the administration.
Yeah, but you don't have to be opponent. Any people, even the poor, cannot go out at night because they're, our security, our life is not secured by the government. The government is being given arms to these impunit people, like the very poorest, and they've been given awards to them not to put them in jail. So it's an impunity over there. So people is marching not because we're just against Chavez or against communists. It's we're just saying that we're hungry, we don't have our needs, that is security, medical needs. We don't have anything there. It's been 15 years that we're going down the hill with economic that is our first time. Venezuela is an oil company producer, and the country don't see that, even the poorest. And I'm seeing that they say, well, the government has half of the population. That's not true. It can't be true because they're not doing anything better than Chavez was doing in the first time he pulled himself out there.
And Annabella, I'm gonna leave it there.
Yeah,
and I get it. You know, you have so much after, you know, this has been so close to your family for all these years to get out there, and I really appreciate you calling in, and please call us again. So, Moises Naim, do you want to reflect on some of what Annabelle was just saying, and maybe even about the nature of democracy there as she was getting into it?
Annabella is reflecting the fact that her family lives in a country, Venezuela, that has the fifth highest murder rate in the world. Caracas is more dangerous statistically than Baghdad. Crime has soared, and the government has not really showed any will or intention to do anything about it. She was also referring to what is called los colectivos. These are vigilante groups, armed, trained, funded by the government. There are paramilitary militias that have been very, very active in repressing the students that are protesting in recent weeks. And they're brutal, they are violent, and they're government-sponsored, and they have become a very important tool of repression. And as for, you know, the support that the government has for from the poor and in poor neighborhoods, it's very important to understand that this government has developed a highly sophisticated system of control. A lot of these very poor people have a critical dependency on the government. They either work for a government entity or they get a subsidy, a weekly, a monthly subsidy, a cash payment. And that those are very, very carefully controlled, and they cannot afford to even show that they're not enthusiastic for the government. And it would be catastrophic for them, both financially and in terms of having a livelihood, but also in terms of physically what can happen to them. So there is a benevolent way of understanding the support that the Maduro government and Chavez before has. And it is true, they did, Chavez especially, inspired and had a very strong emotional connection with the people. But now I think the support they get is coerced, is not an enthusiastic, spontaneous support.
Let me take a call from John in Brooklyn, originally from Guyana. John, turn your radio off so we can talk in real time here.
Yes, sir.
I understand you told Oscrina that your family is divided about Venezuelan politics.
Oh, yes, and that is so sad. I mean, such a beautiful, rich country. I mean, it has everything, all the minerals you can think about, all the food you can think about, and, of course, the big, you know, economy from oil. But the problem is while the oligarchs and the rich people, the capitalists, came in there and was exploiting the country so much that the poor, it's such a vast difference, the very poor and the very rich. It was something I could understand what the socialists meant, but the socialists went too far. And so now the opposition has to bring the country into the middle. And if America can help them to bring it in the middle, whereby they are taking care of the poor as well as the business people, then we could have a country coming back. But Castro made a mess of that country. I mean, with the Chavistas. I wish if it can come back. My wife, she goes back to Venezuela. She's scared. I mean, because the family is split completely. Some are Chavistas. Some you don't know who's who. And it's very dangerous. So, you know, my family, I don't want to go back there until it's ready, you know.
How about that branch of the family that are Chavistas? What makes them Chavistas? Do you get your relatives?
Yes. Well, of course, you know, the Chavistas claim to be supporting the poor people, giving them, you know, you could, if you go into Caracas, you see the beautiful buildings and the beautiful houses, but then up in the hills, you see all these little shacks with antennas, their TVs, and they run water there. They're getting free electricity. So those people that are living in the outskirts are supporting the Chavista government, and you know, some of my wife's family are a part of that support from that they got from the Chavista. Yes. So, you know, it's very difficult, and that is a shame to know how the country is so split. Well, course, you know, it was split economically, so you could understand that one time Venezuela could have fed every single mouth by the oil revenue alone. And so the Venezuelans just sit back and sport and party, and all of the workers were the Colombians and the Chileans and the Portuguese and the Chinese. They come in and they do most of the work. Venezuelans party and sport, the Venezuelans. So they're reaping this particular problem. So they need to get to work and to build back their country,
John,
right now.
John, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. And Joshua Goodman, Venezuela Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. He mentioned Castro, and Chavez had built so many ties to other leftist governments in Latin America, most notably to Cuba. What does the situation in Venezuela today mean regionally, if it means anything outside their own borders?
I think it means, you know, for the countries that depend on Venezuela for oil, most notably Cuba, there's a lot at stake. There's a lot of Central American countries, a lot of the leftist allies of Venezuela in the region have a lot at stake in this crisis. Having said that, it's interesting that, you know, Maduro is not Chavez. He doesn't have that grand vision of uniting Latin America, I think, as much. And he also, more importantly, doesn't have the economic resources that Chavez did. You know, a lot of the things that Moises was talking about are true. I mean, the economy is in crisis, and naturally there's been a retreat on some of the globe-trotting and generous distribution of oil subsidies around the region. You know, in some ways, Venezuela is very much focused on its own problems right now, and the region, I think, has moved on. A lot of the leftist governments now pay lip service, perhaps, to Venezuela. They're not going to criticize it, but I don't think that Venezuela is seen as a model for the rest of the region, even among the leftist allies.
Let me get one more Venezuelan caller in here, Nydia on Staten Island. Nydia, thank you so much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. First-time caller. I just would like you guys to take in consideration in this conversation the fact that Venezuela is in debt with countries like China and some other countries in Europe, that I'm quite afraid of what the consequence will be. The amount of money that Venezuela got in the last 15 years is never before in the history of the country as a country this much money came in. And what is it? We're using the same roads were built by Pedro Jimenez 50 years, 67 years. It's just incredible. The same infrastructure. The money was wasted. And now we have a huge debt. What is going to happen? With Maduro, without Maduro, Maduro stay, Maduro goes. What is going to happen? It's terrifying for me.
Nydia, thank you. And let's get a response from Moises Naim, a former Venezuela trade and industry minister and director of its central bank. And, you know, when I was she talks about China. I was in Ecuador in December and, among other things, got to tour the presidential palace there of Rafael Correa and saw these displays that they had of gifts that were given from other heads of state or foreign ministers to Ecuador. And by far the most elaborate were from China. Ancient jewels from, you know, centuries-old dynasties and beautiful stuff where other governments had given tokens. So I was wondering already if China is working very hard to try to establish a certain kind of influence, especially in the left-leaning countries of Latin America like Ecuador and Venezuela, and how you would answer Nydia's question in that context.
China has an unprecedented presence in Latin America these days, and not just in left-leaning countries, but in any countries that has the raw materials, the minerals, the agricultural products that it needs. So, and that is true also in Asia and Africa. China is on a worldwide effort to secure the resources it needs to sustain its growth. So there's no surprise that they are in Venezuela and Ecuador, but they are also in Brazil, and they're also very important clients of the Chile's copper and in Mexico and so on. So that's one point of a very important actor. And yes, Nydia is right that Venezuela sold oil and futures. So it got the money essentially for a promise of delivering oil to China in very large quantities at very preferential prices. And Nydia is also correct in noting that Venezuela was always an oil country and is likely to continue to be an oil-producing country. But Venezuela never had the windfall of money that Chavez enjoyed. We're talking about, an unprecedented amount of money that allowed him to do whatever he wanted with it. He also had a political blank check given by the original election, and he took power and concentrated power. So he had the money to do whatever he wanted and the political freedom to do whatever he wanted. And Nydia is right that most of what he did was to buy political support by giveaways. If you look at the infrastructure, in the country is decrepit. If you look at electricity, there are there are brownouts and blackouts all the time. If there is not really much to show for 15 years of a massive inflow of money that was augmented, as Nydia said, by huge indebtedness. Venezuela is deeply indebted, and it's Venezuela has the highest premium in terms when accessing international markets for borrowing. And no other countries, not even Ukraine, gets such a risk penalty as Venezuela. So bottom line, this is a government that has not shown great competence in managing the economy. It is a very wealthy country that could have been much better, but it is not. And finally, Brian, if I still have a moment, just
give me about 20 seconds if you can. Go ahead.
No, I wanted to talk about Cuba and its role in Venezuela, but we can leave it for the next time.
I will say, I thought this was the segment of the show where we weren't going to talk about Ukraine, and even that came up in comparison in your answer there. But, Joshua, we just have a minute left, and President Jimmy Carter has announced that he's going to Venezuela for talks between Maduro and the opposition leader Capriles. President Carter, by the way, listeners, will be a guest on this program next month. He'll be here in our studio in March. But what kind of resolution do you think there can be to this crisis? And does Carter have enough relevance left to make a difference, Josh?
It's hard to see a resolution because it's unlikely that the government is going to retreat from what's been its modus operandi for these past 15 years, a real vitriolic rhetoric and a very strong politicized wielding of state power. I don't think that the opposition as well is going to show too much sympathy for anything but, you know, a concrete yielding of power. So it's they're in a tough position. I would just say, though, that for Maduro to get through this crisis, it probably matters less what the opposition says and more what his own base thinks. So that would be the key thing that I would watch, is that poor segment, that people that Moises said perhaps have the most to lose from his government going, whether they are going to jump into these protests or not. And as for Carter, you'd have to ask him. I know that he didn't want to be seen as a mediator right now. His trip was unrelated to the political conflict, although being Jimmy Carter, he's able to meet with lots of people that you and I aren't. So we'll see if he can have any role in bringing the sides together. But I think the opposition has very serious doubts about that. He's not well-liked among Venezuela's opposition.
Huh. Joshua Goodman, Venezuela Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. He left Caracas yesterday and joined us just now from Bogota. And Moises Naim, contributing editor at The Atlantic and author of The End of Power. He also served as Venezuela's Minister of Trade and Industry and director of its central bank in 1989 and 1990. Thank you both very much. And we thank all our wonderful Venezuelan callers.